Welcome to Upside Down Mirror, one woman's true story of a twin flame journey, a reflection of true love, true hate, and everything between, where everything and nothing matters at the same time. Shatter as mirrors of shadows cut through indestructible layers, testing the sands of time. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 3 of Upside Down Mirror. If you recall, in episode 2, I had just committed to buying a building for my practice, my primary care, and my mental health practice. With anything new, there was some excitement in our relationship about what this creation would look like. After all, we were taking a building that looked like a dojo and creating a wellness practice out of it together. Within the couple weeks before the closing, we had beautiful dates together, romantic nights. He was probably one of the most romantic people I've ever met. I remember one night he had cooked dinner for me, started a fire. It was beautiful. I believe it might have even been snowing. And, you know, he put some really nice music on his phone, turned off the televisions, and just lie down with me with the lights on and told me he wanted to stare into my eyes. Basically, that is what the date consisted of. Him and I staring into each other's eyes, looking at each other, cuddling, listening to the music, and falling asleep in one another's arms. As we went into the bed, I remember him kissing me and hugging me. And he lied down in the bed and he put me on top of him and told me he wanted to fall asleep while breathing my breath. You know, as I was lying on top of him, breathing his breath, once again, I felt like the whole world around me could stop and I really wouldn't care. It just felt so right, so peaceful. We would take showers together. I had a big jacuzzi tub in my master bathroom, and I remember filling the jacuzzi tub up and putting bubbles in it and us taking bubble baths together. And as we were taking bubble baths together, we would talk and he would tell me about the different projects he was working on in his residency. And then he would ask me to channel. He would say, you know, I'm working on this project and I need to find out, for example, resveratrol. You know, he's asking me the properties of resveratrol and what would help it cross the blood-brain barrier. And I remember channeling and I would channel answers and, you know, he would look it up later and he'd be like, oh my gosh, that really works. And so I was using my psychic abilities with his medical abilities to really solve these problems within his own dissertation that he was working on for school. And It was really fun. It gave me a great reflection of how him and I would work together. He was so confident in my abilities and so interested in my psychic awareness that he would take notepads and just ask me these random questions and take notes on what I was saying. In the mornings when we would wake up, we would take my dune buggy up into the mountains of where I lived. It was beautiful, beautiful sunrises, beautiful sunsets. We would pack lunch and just sit there together and eat and kiss and once again talk about subjects that intrigued us both. From that perspective, the relationship was very healthy when it came to the ability to communicate and interact and become intimate with one another. His paranormal healing abilities started to present themselves, within these few weeks before closing. I remember I had a really bad urinary tract infection. It was probably because of how often we were being sexual with one another, but it was pretty bad. And he said to me, "I'm going to put this oil on my penis and make love to you, and then you're going to be cured." And I remember saying, "I don't think making love is what I need right now. I'm pretty sure that's why I have the urinary tract infection." And he said, "No, trust me." And I believe it was tea tree oil he put on his penis, but his energy, just like I said, it was quite magnificent. So whenever he was inside of me, I remember feeling like, I even told him it was like someone was doing Reiki inside of me when he was making love to me. And after our lovemaking was done, almost immediately I was cured. And I just, I was like, "How did you do that?" And once again, he just kind of smiled and chuckled and kissed me like it was going to be his little secret. A couple of days later, I was walking the dogs, and my one dog likes to chase bikers. And I was sitting at a picnic table, and I had the leash in my hand, but it wasn't the hard part of the leash, it was the rope part. And a bicyclist came by, and my dog started to run after the bicyclist, and the rope burn on my hand across my four fingers was extremely painful. I mean, I was putting it under cold water. I was crying. It was inflamed. And once again, he took some sort of cream. But the cream was in my house. I can't even remember what kind of cream it was. Rubbed the cream on my fingers, put his hand over mine, and within minutes, it was almost completely healed. So I looked at him and I asked him again, like, "How do you do that?" And he just kind of chuckled and hugged me again. And I remember thinking, someone with these healing abilities, really has to come from the God Creator Source energy. How else can you explain these miraculous abilities that he has? Well, I asked him, I said, "With you being a doctor and a psychiatrist and so many people in the practice, do you know what you could do with those abilities? When people came in thinking they needed pharmaceutical medications, do you know how much you could heal them?" I started to feel a little bit excited about the potential here. And he looked me dead straight in the eyes, this angel that just healed me, and said, "I'm not interested in healing anybody else. I'm really just interested in healing myself." And I was just like, "Wow, that's disappointing." And I felt extremely let down, like, who is this man? And within this time, he was really wanting me to activate him by attuning him to Reiki. And I remember telling him, "Okay, if we're working on activating the Kundalini, which is what Reiki does, then you really need to be in your heart space. You need to give some time between the attunements to let your body settle, to process through the energies." And he was like, "No, I want to do it now." So I remember giving him the Reiki attunements quite close to each other and thinking to myself, he's not really in the heart, so he may have to deal with some psychosis. Of course, I 100% tried to help him with this, telling him about the heart space, guiding him how to get into the heart space, talking about compassion, unconditional love, really trying to support him through his Kundalini awakening. On the morning of the closing for the building I was going to buy for the practice, I felt extremely distraught. I woke up in the morning. I did not want to buy this building. I did not want to commit myself to a mental health primary care practice. This is someone who doesn't even believe in pharmaceutical medications. And at the beginning of my practice, it was all about me and psychotherapy and spirituality. and treating the clients without medication. And then the practice turned, basically out of my heart space and went right into needing psychiatry and primary care and needing pharmaceuticals. So, it was going in a direction I did not like. It was not in my heart. It was not my authentic self. So I woke up once again saying, I don't know if I want to do this. And he woke up, got dressed, and he's like, well, you're doing it. And I was like, okay, let's get ready to go close. And he's like, I'm not coming. I have something to do. That morning of the closing was his birthday. And I thought we were going to spend the day together after closing. He said, no, I have things to do. I have people to see. I've got to go. He kissed me on the head and he left me to do the closing by myself. In spite of what my intuition said, I went ahead with the closing, finished the process, and the building was mine. At this point, we had a lot of work ahead of us, in many different ways, transitioning the practice from one location to another, building rooms because the practice did not have enough rooms. And this was quite expensive and quite time consuming. So, I definitely needed his support and help at this time because I felt like, it's something that I felt might be too large for me at that time. And he convinced me to do it. So I was really counting on his emotional support mainly. Something interesting happened that I probably should have taken note of during this process. I had an office in the new building as everything around us was being constructed. He did complete the blueprints, as he said, quite gifted. He said his mother was a PhD engineer. And he seemed to be able to do really anything he set his mind to. I had actually got a quote for the same blueprints that he did by himself, and it was a $13,000 quote. And he was able to do the same thing within a day with the same results. He never failed to amaze me. There's basically nothing he couldn't do. Anyways, I was sitting in my office and he comes in, he takes out his checkbook and he's like, okay, how much money do you need? I looked at him baffled and I was like, well, I don't need any money. Why are you asking me that? And he said, I'm willing to help now. I'm willing to help. I'm willing to give and invest in this project. And I've always kind of had a rule, and that is not to depend on men for money. It's something that my mom had kind of literally bashed into my head when I was little. And so I looked at him and was like, no, I'm fine. I don't need your money. And he looked at me and said, oh my gosh, when are you going to get out of money? He goes, when are you going to be out of money? The building, the salaries, me taking 95%. There's no way you can have money left. And then I looked at him shocked. It was almost like he wanted me to be out of money, which now that I reflect back on it, that's very obvious that he did. But during that time, I just kind of chuckled and said, no, I'm good. I don't need your money. During this time, we were working 14-hour days. He had his work at the university to do. And my practice. So he was extremely busy, going on very few hours sleep. We would come home exhausted. So the days seemed to be going by pretty fast. There were times when we would be working together. Granted, it was stressful trying to do the work that we needed to do, anyways, the work trying to get the building in shape. And then him working another job as well. However, what I noticed was is he was extremely moody and mean to me at times. It seemed as though the more I needed him, the more I needed his help or his support, he would just yell at me, make me feel stupid, really even call me stupid. He had never done this before. I started to feel like, wow, I was kind of getting under his thumb and feeling like he was belittling me, trying to make me feel that I wasn't very worthy. As soon as I started to feel like that, he would once again take me to a dinner, send me a very thoughtful gift, do something that would make me change my mind. One very memorable night, we were lying in bed and he looks at me and he says, "Okay, so we're not going to have a child together because you're on birth control. So what I've decided is one way to be married to you but not be married to you is by doing this business contract." And he said he was going to propose a business contract and make the business, have stocks, and he was wanting to buy stocks and invest, and that, he would own a certain amount of the business and I would have to give him returns on all the profit made. I hadn't really entered into that type of mentality in my practice yet because I was, more kind of a go with the flow type of person. But he was adamant about this. He said, "This is how we will be husband and wife. We will be married through the business." This contract did not sound appealing to me whatsoever, but I remember kind of laughing it off and saying, "Yeah, whatever," just thinking, this isn't something he's really going to go through with. So I didn't really put too much thought in it. Meanwhile, he started to introduce telemedicine in the practice because that's what his forte was in the university that he was working at. And he was telling me that because he lived an hour away and he was really busy, he wanted to start seeing clients via telemedicine, so he wanted to start getting us contracted and licensed for telemedicine. Now, about this time, we're in the year 2010, right around the holidays. I remember my sisters and I were wanting to go to Santa Monica because I had taught in Santa Monica. I did a lot of energy work there, was helping my teacher during the time, and my sisters wanted to go to Santa Monica with me and visit, maybe go to Hollywood, look around. So we planned a trip. Gabe was very unhappy that I was taking this trip with my family. And then he announced that he also had family in California, which he actually did. That is where, his brother lived, and he said that that's where his mother was living as well at the time. And he was also making plans to go to California during the same time to visit his family. My sisters and I arrived in California and just immediately started having a lot of fun together, exploring new places, going to the beaches, just having some really good, fun sister time together. All of a sudden, he starts to call me constantly, wanting to be on the phone with me, wanting to text. My sisters were like, "We're going to throw the phone out of the car because we can't stand the fact that you're constantly on the phone." And I remember just turning the phone off, and before I turned it off, just texting him saying, "I really do need to pay attention to, my family because we're on this trip together." Later, when I turned the phone on, he was outraged. He was demanding to see me, saying that he was only about 30 minutes away. He was going scuba diving somewhere in the area, so, he could make some time to see me, take me to dinner. So I remember telling my sisters, "You guys go have fun." I think they were going to go get tattoos together, and I was planning on meeting him. I told him to meet me in front of the spiritual practice that my teacher had owned on Main Street in Santa Monica. He, parked and came up to get me, and I wanted to walk in and introduce him to my teacher. And he actually says to me, "She's psychic, right?" And I said, "Yeah, she's psychic." And he absolutely refused to be introduced to my teacher. I remember my spidey senses were going off then, thinking, wow, he's really scared of what this woman would read about him. Once again, I kind of just, shoved that under the rug and went with him, and we had dinner and of course went to a hotel where, he made love to me over and over again and made sure that I was really, really, once again, attached to his being, his consciousness, and then went about his way. continued the trip with my sisters. We had an amazing time and then came back to Maryland, where I was from. However, Gabe was going to be staying in California about 2 weeks longer to finish his visit with his family. During the time when he was in California and I was awaiting for him to come back, I remember having feelings and visions of a blonde woman in his energy field. I could distinctly feel, see, and experience this woman in his field. And I remember thinking, maybe that's just part of me being paranoid. But right around that time, he also was calling me and texting me, and New Year's was coming up, and he was saying, "You are my New Year's resolution. My goal in life is to create the best life with you romantically, physically, emotionally, financially." He really had this vision of us creating this kingdom together, just saying that he couldn't stop thinking about me, that I was in his every thought. So, I took the visions of the woman and, put them on the back burner, thinking to myself it was probably just my paranoia. He comes back into the practice, after New Year's. He was getting comfortable once again. We were getting back into our old routine, and he says to me, "I have to talk to you. It's very important that we talk in my office." So I went into his office and I said, "What's up?" And he says, "I have my mother moving in with me." He lived an hour away. I would often go to his house just to hang out with him when he couldn't make it to where I lived. He'd spend some of the weekends there. And he was telling me that he has to have his mother move in because his mother is having a difficult time and wants to be with one of her sons. She divorced her husband, Gabe's father, a while back, and she was wanting to be with either Gabe or his brother, during this hard time in her life. And he said, "She's moving in with me, but part of that means that you can't come and visit." And I looked at him kind of shocked and thinking, "Well, why can't I come and visit?" And he said, "Well, I haven't told my mother about you. She would be pretty upset because it's against her belief systems that I would be with a woman that already has kids. She sees me as being in a relationship with someone, marrying someone that doesn't have kids, and me starting my own family." I remember feeling like really disappointed, kind of a pang in my heart, hitting that chord of not being worthy, not being good enough for him, like kind of sort of being like this used material that, he picked up. Like I was a secondhand type of girlfriend for him, that I wasn't clean enough, So that was, he hit a weak spot there. And, so I didn't say too much. I didn't protest, but I did tell him, I said, "I had this vision of you being with this blonde woman. She was in your field." I told him about my experiences and I said, "Why am I having that vision? Is there something here that you're not telling me?" And then I looked at him and I said, "Why don't you take a picture of your mother with your dog on your couch so that I know that you're telling me the truth?" And he looked at me and he said, "If you don't trust me, then we can end this relationship because I don't want to be in a relationship with someone who doesn't trust me. Rebecca, I can't believe you're questioning me about my mother living with me." Once again, I felt bad, felt paranoid, and just, chalked it up to me being insecure and really dismissed him of that obligation to take a picture of his mother on his couch with his dog so that I knew that he was telling the truth. Just as a side note, during this time, within the few months that we had been in this building, I had one psychologist quit because he said that the energy was very negative. He couldn't work in this new building, that he felt like he was being suffocated. Then I had a few other people tell me that they also felt like the energy was very stagnant there, very dark. So I remember thinking, okay, this building definitely needs a clearing, and I would, sage it, clear it daily, but it seemed like this energy kept coming back. It sort of felt like there were portals within the land that the building was located on that I couldn't seem to clear or cleanse fast enough before this energy started to come back within the building. Right after Gabe's mother moved in with him, the practice started getting busier and busier. There was probably about, at this time, 50 employees, 4,000 patients, lots of tasks to accomplish, lots of people to manage, a lot of stress going on within our lives to try to, bring harmony to everything. Gabe started to basically lose it. I mean, he started to become extremely angry. He obviously did not know how to manage people or deal with people. With everything that's been going on, he became, to me, an essential part of the practice. I think I put him into a management position, mainly because I felt like he was my significant other and I wanted him to be that part in the practice. My sister, before he came, was kind of my second hand man. Her and I did actually a very, very, very good job at running the practice together. When he came, he seemed to really dumb down her role, trying to make me, focus more on him as that person to run the practice. However, his management techniques seemed to get really bizarre. I remember one time we had younger secretaries and he didn't think they did something right. So he told me that when the practice closed, he was going to go and throw a chair up against the window right next to them so that basically he would scare them to a point where they would listen to everything he said. And I remember saying, "No, you're absolutely not going to do that. That's extremely unprofessional." I was constantly talking him out of these irrational or erratic behaviors that he was doing. He would, if he didn't get his way, well, I mean, one time he was jumping up and down like a baby, screaming. I was seeing temper tantrums. It just started getting worse and worse. And then paranoia started to take over. I remember he was one day he was in my office just checking my phone, like every single number I called. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he was like, "I'm checking to make sure you never called your ex-husband from this phone." And I was like, "We're really busy. You can't like be in here doing that." And he did it. He checked my office and the office next to me for hours, making sure that I never called my ex-husband from any one of those phones. As each day passed, he seemed to get more rage in his eyes, almost like this evil person was coming out. There was a nurse practitioner that was helping me manage an aspect of my business, and he demanded her phone, saying that she was conspiring with me to communicate with my ex-husband. It was quite embarrassing, but she really liked me, so he had cornered her at this time in her office, and she was giving him her phone while he was looking through it and basically taking it completely apart. I felt like, wow, I'm losing control. I really don't know what to do at this point. With everything that we had to do, it became a focused obsession about my ex-husband and whether or not I was talking to him, looking through my computers, my Facebook, my cell phone, anything and everything that was near me that was electronic, where I could communicate with anybody on, he was looking through it. It seemed like we were fighting constantly about this. He was outraged. This is when he started to grab me. He would grab me so hard and look at me with like the devil was coming out of his eyes. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, I don't know who this man is. And, by the time he would let go of me, there would be bruise marks up and down my arm. At this time, I was so beyond myself because I was really, really, really in love with this man. Yet I was seeing a side of him that was devilish, like there was demons coming out of him. Just when I felt like things couldn't get any more stressful, my employees started coming to me with these complaints about him that just took my breath away. He was telling everybody that basically the computer screen was talking to him, that there were electromagnetic frequencies coming from the computer screen that were, trying to tell him what to do. Before any patient would come in, he would have to turn off the lamp and lie it down. So the patients would come in, the lamp would be lying down on the ground, sometimes behind the couch. During all of this madness, he presents this contract to me that he had been talking about earlier, where, he'd be making some absurd amount of money from the practice that I had created from scratch, and he has been here then less than a year. I looked at the contract and I was thinking, there's just no way that I'm going to execute this. But, one of the nights that he was at my house, he just wanted me to sign it. He almost seemed desperate for me to sign this contract. And I remember thinking, this is written on a piece of paper. Him and I are in the room. Like, really, what's it gonna hurt if I just sign this contract? He's going mad. I don't want him to absolutely lose control and grab me and put more bruises on me if I don't sign this contract. So I signed the contract, just thinking I was doing it really to make him feel better, to give him peace of mind. A few days later, he was at the practice, once again, putting the lamps down, telling people that, his computer screen was basically talking to him. This was freaking a lot of people out. And then he started mumbling to himself, kind of talking to himself, walking around mumbling things. And I remember thinking, okay, this is getting really out of hand. No one is trusting him. He's a medical doctor. He's prescribing medications. I'm absolutely going to have to put a halt to him practicing here. So we canceled all of his patients and rescheduled them. And basically, I had a meeting with him and told him, there's just no way that you can be here right now. You need a break. You're not stable enough. And he left extremely mad, extremely angry, saying things to me that, I would not repeat on this podcast right now. And I didn't talk to him for a few days. One of the weeks that I didn't have my kids, I was sleeping in my house. My house, at the time was 5,600 square feet. It was in a very big house. And, it had the type of security system where if you opened a door, it would say what door was being opened. I felt unsafe. So a couple of days earlier, I had had a guy friend basically where the dog door was, close that section of the door in the garage up. But, one day I was sleeping and I heard in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, garage door open, which means somehow the garage door was able to be open. Somehow he got in. And I remember sitting straight up in the middle of the night, just being terrified. I had put my taser gun next to me because I knew I didn't feel safe. By the time I grabbed the taser gun, he was in my room. And I grabbed it and I turned it on because it had a flashlight to it. And I told him, I was like, this is a taser gun. And he kind of laughed at me and ran towards me. And I got out of bed and tried to kind of chase him with it, but he just took that from me very fast and threw it across the room. He slapped me across the face. It was really, really scary. Then he picked up the phone, called my ex-husband, basically just let him have it about everything that he thought was happening between us, which was nothing. And I remember at that time being absolutely petrified that he was possibly going to really hurt me. Somehow I was able to call my sister. I don't know if he had went to the bathroom or what was going on, and I told her, to come up and help me because he had taken my car keys. And I said, please, he's here, please come up and help me. And she was there within probably 10 minutes knocking on the door, and he basically just kind of let me be when she got there. And she said, "Gabe, leave right now." He left. I was really, really scared. Like I said, it was like the devil was coming out of this man. When I looked in his eyes, it was like he hated me. Pure hatred was in his eyes. At one point during that whole battle, when he came in my house and I looked into his eyes and I had my phone in my hand, he had knocked me down just to get to that phone. And I remember thinking, wow, like if I don't give him this, he's really gonna hurt me. Somehow I'd gotten it back, and that's how I was able to call my sister. But she commanded that he leave, and he left. The next day, I knew I had to get some type of bigger help. So I went to the head person where he was going to school at the university for the psychiatry department, the chairperson, and it was the head psychiatrist, also his supervisor. I told his supervisor everything that was happening, and I said, I'm extremely concerned. You have to help me. This man is losing it. I'm concerned for his mental health. He's seeing patients at your university as well. He needs help. And I told this man, I was like, please do not tell him I was here. He's gonna get angry, and I don't want him to come and try to hurt me again. Within 30 minutes after me leaving, Gabe called me, chuckled, and said, "You think that my supervisor's not going to tell me what you just did? You're crazy. He just thinks that you're some crazy girl who is in love with me and is trying to get me in trouble." I just remember feeling so betrayed that a psychiatrist would basically tell him what I was saying, even though I told him I thought I was in danger. Things calmed down, so they seemed, within the next week. The university was still allowing him to see patients, so he demanded that he get his patients back within the practice. They were rightfully his patients, and I thought, okay, I guess I'm going to try to see what he's like when he comes back, if he's able to handle the stress of seeing patients, if he's acting rational. During the next few times he was at the practice, it kind of seemed like he went back to normal. His eyes went back to that same loving self that he had been before. He started to do a good job with the patients. It seemed like he was getting his behaviors under control, not seeming to, talk to voices that no one could see. So, I began to relax a little bit. We started to pick up on our relationship, him telling me how sorry he was, once again with the passionate kisses. Then one night, it was about 1 in the morning, and I got this really strong intuitive message to drive to his house at 1 in the morning, which is very, very, very unusual. I've never just drove to his house that's an hour away that late at night. So I drive to his house, get there probably about 2, knock on the door, his dogs start barking. He comes to the door, looks at me like he is just petrified to see my face, and he says, "Leave right now or I'm calling the police." Then I knew that my intuitive abilities had not failed me, and I said, "You go ahead and call the police. I said, "What's going on?" Because I could hear a woman in the background, and it definitely did not sound like his mother. And he looks at me with this fear in his eyes, and he says, "Please, please, just meet me a couple blocks down the road, and I will explain everything that's happening to you. Just go there now." So I go down the road a couple blocks, waiting for him to come and explain to me, what's going on. He comes and he meets me and, once again starts kissing me and telling me, "I will tell you everything that's going on if you come to my house tomorrow," he says. This, and I said, "Who are you living with? Who is that? Is that a roommate? Is that your girlfriend? What is going on?" I was absolutely heartbroken because I knew there was much more here than meets the eye. I thought, wow, this guy has a girlfriend. He's been living with this blonde girl the entire time that I thought he was living with his mother. And he tells me, "If you want to know the answers, you'll come back tomorrow." So I anxiously waited till the next day, went home, got up in the morning, showered, came right back to his house, walked in. It looked like there had been a hurricane in the house, holes in the wall, stuff thrown everywhere. And he's sitting there. And I said, "Who is that?" I said, "Is that your girlfriend?" And he goes, "No, it's not my girlfriend." He goes, "It's my wife." I felt like someone had just taken a knife and stabbed me so deep in the heart that I would just die. I was speechless. I was paralyzed. I was absolutely devastated. I'm going to stop here for right now. I'm going to leave you guys with reflections on the fact that energies travel. So, anytime we're in a relationship and we see these dark type of behaviors, and we're looking at someone like, wow, that person's pure evil. What I've learned to do through this whole thing is once again think of myself as that mirror. What about me is calling in these type of quote unquote dark evil behaviors? That has really saved me through this whole process. So you can think about that within your own life or your own relationships. Until next time.